Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is understanding and resolving connection wait timeout exceptions in WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenters are Hobart Bush III and David Tyler. Hobart works on the WebSphere Application Server L2 support team, where he resolves issues for customers related to the EJB container, DB connections, transactions, and web services. He has resolved issues on these items for 6 years and has resolved numerous high-impact issues for our clients. David Tyler has been a Level 2 support analyst for WebSphere Application Server since 2001. He is experienced with all supported versions of the product with a specialized focus on components such as connection pooling, transactions, messaging, web services, EJBs, and JNDI naming. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Hobart. You may begin.
Thank you, David Long. I'd like to move to slide number 2. Today we'll be covering in our agenda a connection pooling overview, just a general overview of connection pooling implementation in WebSphere Application Server. Our colleagues presented a WSTE on understanding J2C connection pooling in WebSphere Application Server last month, and you can locate that document in our additional resources. In addition, we'll be covering connection wait timeouts, the flow in which causes connection wait timeouts, problem symptoms such as the J2CA 0045 exception, slow performance in both the JVM and the application, data collection options using either our WebSphere tracing or our WSAdmin commands. In addition, our data analysis will cover 5 common root causes that we see and also the clients see that could be potential causes for connection timeout exceptions and how to resolve each root cause. And at the end, we'll have a question and answer period. Can we move to slide number 3, please?
Okay, so first thing that we want to take you through is just a general overview of connection pooling. Our presentation is based on connection wait timeouts, which is the most common problem that we see in the area of connection pooling. But we want to give you some background if you're not familiar with connection pooling, just to kind of set the table. So the reason why we have connection pooling in WebSphere Application Server is to improve performance. Creating a database connection is a very expensive operation, and to remove the overhead of the application having to create a new connection each time it wants to execute a query or execute an update against the database, WebSphere will pool the connections. So the connections are returned to the connection pool when they're closed by the application, and they remain there for a period of time to be reused the next time the application requests a connection, rather than the connection actually being destroyed. Our connection pooling implementation is based on the Java Connector Architecture, or JCA specification, which is sometimes called J2C. So JCA and J2C are used interchangeably. In version 5.0 and 5.1, we supported the JCA 1.0 specification. In version 6 and version 7, we started to support JCA 1.5. And in the most recent versions, version 8.0 and 8.5, we now support the JCA 1.6 specification. So with our JCA connection pooling, we support connections to any back end as long as you have a resource adapter for that particular back end. There are a couple of resource adapters that ship with WebSphere Application Server. One is the Relational Resource Adapter, or RRA for short, which is used for connecting to relational databases. We also ship a couple of JMS resource adapters, one for the default messaging provider and one for WebSphere MQ. There are other resource adapters that are supplied by vendors for various other backends. So we're going to talk mostly about database connection pooling in this presentation. However, we want you to be aware that the concepts that we're talking about, these types of problems and how to resolve them, could happen with any backend. It just so happens that most of the time we see problems with database connections, so we're going to focus mostly on that. So to use a database connection pool, you must create a WebSphere Application Server data source. So moving on to slide four. Okay, so connection wait timeouts. What are we talking about? What are we going to be dealing with in this presentation? Like I said, this is probably the most common problem that we see with connection pooling. And here's basically what it means. So anytime you create a data source or a connection factory that has a connection pool, it has a maximum size. That's one of the properties that you specify. The default value is 10. So the connection pool can create up to the maximum number of connections and allocate them to applications. To get a connection, the application performs a JNDI lookup of the data source and then calls get connection on the data source. When it does that, WebSphere returns a connection in the free pool, meaning a connection that's in the pool that's not being used by another thread, if one is available. If there are no connections in the free pool, we just create a new connection as long as the connection pool is below its maximum size. We'll keep growing the connection pool up to the maximum size, and then once it gets to the maximum size, if all of the connections are in use and a thread comes in and requests another connection, that thread starts to wait for a free connection to become available. The thread will wait for, by default, 180 seconds or 3 minutes, and that's specified in the connection timeout property, which is another of the connection pool properties. You can reduce that timeout. A lot of people like to set it to 60 seconds, for example, so that threads are not tied up waiting as long. But after that connection timeout period expires, you get a connection wait timeout exception and a J2CA0045E error, and we're going to be talking to you about how to resolve those in this presentation. So going to slide five.
Problem symptoms. There could be several symptoms that occur when the connection pool is exhausted of connections. The most one seen in system out log will be the J2CA0045 exception. And note, when the J2CA0045 exception is thrown, it actually provides the resource or the pool manager name of the data source causing the issue. In this case, the data source name is JDBC/DB2Demo. And take note of this pool manager name because we'll use this pool manager throughout the presentation. In addition to that, you'll see also connection wait timeout exceptions. And note as well, the timeout waiting for a connection is 180,000 milliseconds. As Dave Tyler noted on the previous slide, the default here we can see is 180 seconds. From an end-user perspective, we'll see slow performance on both from the application perspective. So if a client, if you have an end-user that is accessing the application from a servlet, they will see a slow response from the application. As well, the JVM will be in a hung state. We put hung in quotation marks because truly it is in a wait condition state because it's waiting for a free connection from the pool. And we can move forward to slide number six. In the previous slide, I was discussing that the threads in the JVM will be in a hung or a wait state for a free connection. Here is a sample Java core thread dump that shows many threads at the top stack. Here, let's look at the very first line of the top of the stack. We can note that the web container, that the thread actually provides the web container name, and it's, the thread name is web container 6. We should be able to correlate that back to the connection pool, and we should get the thread name to a matching connection handle. Here, if you look further down the stack, we can see an object.wait, and then below that, we see a freepool.create or wait for a connection. So, again, the JVM is not hung. It's in a wait condition state while we wait for a connection to be available from the pool so we can continue processing. Likewise, if Java cores or thread dumps aren't outputted, you'll see a similar message in the system out log that, again, says that a certain thread, which should have a matching connection handle, has been hung for a set amount of time. And we can move forward to slide number seven.
Okay, so now that we've talked about the problem symptoms that you might see as a result of this condition, now we're going to talk about, well, what do you have to do? What kind of data do you need to collect to determine the root cause? So one of the things that we frequently recommend is enable a connection pool trace. So that's the best option if the problem is easily reproducible. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But if it is easily reproducible and you can enable the trace, you can see that the trace specification is listed there. The WASDAT-J2C component is our connection pooling component. RRA is the relational resource adapter that I mentioned before. If you enable a trace, we encourage you to enable it on the configuration tab in the trace settings to get the trace from startup. There are two options. There's the configuration tab and the runtime tab. With the runtime tab, the problem with that is that the data is only captured after the trace is enabled. So sometimes, you may see the problem occur and then you enable the trace, but we're missing all of the information in the trace showing what led up to the problem occurring. And then even in the connection pool data in the trace, the time that the connection was created and allocated might be missing. Some of the trace entries that we'll show later that show the stack trace of the thread that called get connection, those might not be generated either. So ideally, we prefer the trace on the configuration tab to get a startup trace, and that would show us everything that led up to the problem occurrence. Moving to slide 8. So another option, instead of getting a trace that gives us some of the same information that we look for in the trace, is a command called show pool contents that can be run from the WS admin command line tool. This often contains enough information for us in support to determine the cause of connection wait timeouts. And of course, we'll be showing you what this output looks like as well as what we look for in the trace. So hopefully you can look for some of the same things that we look for to determine the cause of the problem. You can see the example that tells you exactly how to run this command from WSAdmin. Note that the name that you want to provide here is the display name of the data source rather than the JNDI name of the data source. That's one thing that sometimes people aren't aware of, and it causes the command not to work. So you want to use the display name of the data source. This can also be invoked directly from an application using a JMX API. It's an option. It's not one that people typically use because it involves, changing your application code and it's usually easier to run it from the command line. And we also recommend, along with this, enabling a very lightweight trace, conleak logic equals all. And this will show the stack traces of any get connection calls where the connection is used for more than 10 seconds, which is usually pretty useful in determining, where the application might either be holding a connection for a very long time or perhaps even not closing and leaking the connection. So if you just have the conleak logic equals all enabled and not the regular connection pooling traces, that trace by itself will not write anything to the trace file unless you have other traces enabled. The output will be included in the show pool contents output, which makes that even more useful. So going on to slide number 9.
Now that we've covered data collection by Dave Tyler and both trace output and show pool contents, we need to understand how we would go about reading this trace data. The first step we should find is the offending pool manager or the pool manager that's causing the problem. As I noted earlier, the pool manager in this case and throughout the presentation when we review our sample data will be JDBC/DB2 demo. And you will find the same output as Dave mentioned, for our trace and also for our show pool contents output. The next is to identify the maximum connection pool setting. It's important to know what the current max connection pool setting is so we know how many connections we're actually exhausting. In this case, throughout the presentation, we'll have a total number of connections of 5. And then for connections in use, we should check the number of connections in the shared pool information and the unshared connection information. Trace output will be broken up in 3 main sections. We'll have the shared connection pool information, we'll have an unshared connection pool information, and we'll also have a free connection information. And we need to identify those and check the connections in each one of those different areas so we can understand the pool at large. It's also important to note when we have this trace data, we can identify the type of transactions in use. The global transactions will be noted by com.ibmws.tx.jta, and the local transaction containment will be noted by com.ws.localtransaction. And we'll explain both of these in detail later in the presentation. The MC wrapper ID will be the unique identifier for each connection. And again, this is important to note in the trace data. In addition, I find it easier to note also the thread ID and the thread name. Again, these will be different, unique, and it gives a general idea if we have connections being used on the same thread and also the same thread name. And again, we can match the thread name in our Java core data and also in our thread dumps and also in our system outlog. So it's more about drawing a correlation between all the data that we've collected using different identifiers in each data. For instance, if you see a hung thread in a Java core, we can find that thread name. If we take a trace, we should be able to find that in the trace output. And again, if we have that thread name, we should also be able to find it in the system outlog. Another important entry in the trace is also the handle count. A value of one determines that the application has not issued a closed request for that particular MC wrapper ID. A value of zero means that the application has issued a closed for that MC wrapper ID. And connections and handles are very important to determine if we're leaking connections in the pool or if connections are being closed properly in the pool. Can we move forward to slide number 10?
Can I add one thing to that slide? So I wanted to mention with the trace data, the examples that we have in this presentation show the maximum number of connections set to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is basically so that we could fit the output onto our slides. But I did want to make sure people know that 5 is not a reasonable value to use, especially in production environments. It's just kind of for demonstration purposes.
Exactly. So our trace data will be tailored to recreating the problem for this sample data. And we can move forward to slide number 10. So these are the 5 root causes that we'll be going in depth regarding our trace data. These are the most common root causes, and the way that we're going to explain the information, explain root causes, is more of a problem elimination standpoint. One of the first things I look for, and a lot of other L2 analysts look for, is the use of shareable connections with a long-running LTC. That is probably one of the most prevalent issues that we see. Because it is one of the settings that comes with WebShare as a default behavior. Next, we'll be looking at multiple connection requests on the same thread without calling a connection close. Another common root cause is a connection leak in the application. Simply, the application isn't issuing a connection close on a get connection call, or the application isn't closing the connection properly due to exception handling. Another root cause is long-running queries or slow database response time. This causes the connection pool to be used for connections in the pool to be used for a long extended period of time, more than the application developers or the system administrators or even the database administrator intended. Again, the use of long-running queries or slow response from the database causes the connection in the pool to be exhausted. And then from a tuning perspective, setting the max connections in the pool to be too low and understanding that we need to match the connection pool to meet the demands of the application or the end users. Moving to slide number 11. Before we can discuss using shareable connections with the LTC, we first need to understand what is an LTC. An LTC is a local transaction containment. It is what WebShare uses in the absence of a global transaction. It will be started every time a servlet is invoked or an EJB is used without a global transaction or a container managed transaction. The LTC is important and different from a global transaction because it is not controlled by the application. It will be closed when the LTC will end when the servlet method ends or the EJB method exits. That is different from a global transaction that is handled by the application, because the global transaction will end when the connection, when the transaction is committed or rolled back. Long-running LTCs can cause the connection to be held for an extremely long amount of time due in their nature. If the application issues a connection close, but the servlet method hasn't exited or the EJB method has exited, the connection will still be held in the pool until the LTC until the LTC ends. And this is in the case with shareable connections in the pool. And like I said, connections will automatically be closed when the LTC ends for the case of shareable connections in the pool. We'd like to move forward to slide number 12. So this is our first sample output. And I'll spend a little time on this slide to identify some of the key important aspects to look forward, not only on this particular slide and this root cause, but also throughout the entire presentation. In this case, we're using shareable connections with the long-running LTC. Moving from the top of the output to the lower, the most important thing to notice here is the pool manager name. As you can see, it's JDBC/DB2 demo, and that was what we found in the system out log and is what we found now when we outputted the trace. Again, we can see the total number of connections is 5, so we know that the connection pool is currently exhausted of all 5 defined connections. Now, when I was speaking earlier, with the pool output is broken up into 3 main sections. We see here, we'll look at the first section, shareable connection information. And underneath that, we know that it's a COM.WS local transaction. And next to that, we have a transaction handle followed by the @ sign. And we see that the current transaction, this LTC, is in a running state. In addition to that, the MC wrapper ID is unique. It's unique between all 5 connections in the pool, and in this case, we'll focus on 5874C60. Here, we see the thread ID, and the thread name from earlier is still Web Container 6. And it's important to note here as well that the handle count is 0. So this tells us that the application has issued a connection close on this particular connection. The last 2 important notes is the free connection information. If a connection was closed, it would be returned to the free pool, and then it would see a connection handle here. And again, the unshared connection information. And if we are using unshareable connections versus shareable connections, the connections listed will be under the unshared connection information. So let's move forward to slide number 13. So the trace data showed that we were using shareable connections in the LTC. Again, we know that because we had 5 connections under the shared connection information pool. We had the connection handle known as com.ibm.ws, that local transaction. Now, the connection application had requested a close on the connection as denoted by a handle count of 0. When an application closes a shareable connection, the connection is not truly closed, nor is it returned to the free pool. Rather, it will remain in the shared pool, ready for another request within the same LTC for that same resource. Again, the connection will not be removed from the pool until the LTC ends. And in this case, I've seen a lot of clients run into this issue where they are closing connections properly. The application is not leaking connections, but due to the nature of the WebSphere configuration, we have to keep the connection in the pool until the LTC ends. And let's move forward to slide number 14. So how will we resolve shareable connections with the LTC? The connection usage can be encapsulated in a global transaction. This will give us control over how the application is handling transactions and how the application is handling connections. So if the application called a connection close and then follow that with a connection with a transaction commit, then the connection will be removed from the pool immediately. And again, we can change the time between the application calling connection close and the LTC end is reduced. In this case, we have, in some scenarios, the application will issue a connection close, but it will continue to do other processes or other unrelated tasks that leave the connection in the pool in a very long time that can cause this type of issue where the connection pool is exhausted. So we want to eliminate that and reduce the amount of time between the connection close request and the time that the LTC ends. One of the most simplest solutions we can do is we can change and configure the application or the connection pool to use unshareable connections and rather than shareable connections. This will allow the connection to be removed from the pool immediately once the connection call is closed. And this can be performed two ways. If the application team still has access, or the WebSphere administrator still has access to the application, the most preferable and recommended way is to change this setting in the resource references. You can change the RS sharing scope to unshareable. But again, this is not always the case. Sometimes the application developers or the application is no longer allowed to be edited. And we can override these settings that the application has by setting a connection pool custom property. We can set either a global connection type override to unshareable or a default connection type override. A global connection type override will override all the settings, including the resource references, if they're defined in the application. A default connection type override will change the settings if there is none specified in the resource references. And this goes back to the deployment descriptors in the application. If the application does not specify the use of unshareable or shareable connections, then default connection type override will be fine. If it does, then we can specify a global connection type override. Moving on to slide 15.
Okay, so we wanted to give you some more background on shareable versus unshareable connections. Honestly, I think this is probably the most common cause of connection wait timeouts. And the first thing that we usually look for in the trace or in the show pool contents output is, are you using a shareable connection in an LTC? And if you are, very often that turns out to be the cause of the problem. And the most common solution, as Hobart said, was to switch from shareable to unshareable connections. And so, you know, we usually get a lot of questions about that, about what the difference is, you know, are you going to suffer any negative consequences from switching? And so we want to address that. So the difference between them basically is with an unshareable connection, only one connection handle to the physical connection is created. With shareable connections, one connection handle is called for each get connection call within a transaction, either a global transaction or an LTC. So with the shareable connection, you're not actually getting the physical connection, you're just getting a handle to the physical connection. And if you have multiple get connection calls, you can either share that same connection handle, or if you have multiple get connection calls without calling close, which we'll talk about later, you actually wind up with multiple connection handles. The default is shareable, and oftentimes we're asked, well, why is the default shareable? If you want us to switch it to unshareable, why isn't that the default? Well, shareable being the default is actually mandated in the JCA specification. You can look at section 7.9 in the JCA 1.6 specification, and it says it pretty clearly. So in order to be compliant with that spec, our default is shareable. But unshareable does make more sense in some cases, and we'll explain why. So the functionality between the two is effectively the same if the application gets only one connection within a transaction. If you're only getting one connection, there's no sharing that's going to be done anyway. So between shareable and unshareable, everything happens exactly in the same way. Now, if your application does get multiple connections within one transaction, shareable connections will result in the same connection being reused. So multiple handles to the same physical connections are used. Now, the application must call close on the first connection before getting the second connection. We call that the get-use-close pattern. Otherwise, the sharing will not take place. Because of that, you know, it shares the same connection. Sometimes we're asked about the performance impact if you switch to unshareable connections. But the performance impact is really negligible. because even with unshareable connections, the second GET connection call would likely just get a connection from the free pool, which would avoid the overhead of getting a new connection. And so because we are pooling connections anyway, the difference between getting a connection from the free pool and just reusing a shareable connection within the same transaction, there's really not a performance difference there. That should give a good background on that. Moving on now to slide 16.
Root cause number two, multiple connection requests without call and close. Again, let's start at the top of the stack or the trace output. Here we see the pool manager name, JDBC/DB2 demo. Again, the total number of connections in use is 5, so we know the connection pool is exhausted. Underneath this, we have a new trace entry. This is the waiter count is set to 7. In this case, the connection pool is exhausted. However, we've had 7 new GET connection requests from the application. So we know that the application is continuing to processing. However, we can't fulfill those 7 requests by the application. And again, this is not as important information to know when tuning the application server for connections, because if we know that the application has demanded 7 new connections and we have a max connection of 5, then we at least need to increase the connection pool to 15 to adhere by the demands of the application. Underneath this, we see the shared connection information. Here, let's note 2 things. I've only listed 2 connections in use because they are running on the same transaction on the same thread. Now, if we look at the handle count, the handle of the transaction, we see they're the exact same, 5BDC62C. And they're both in a running state. However, the MC wrapper IDs are completely different, denoted by the first 2 letters, 59 and 5B. Here we also see that they're running on the same thread, which should be the case when they're running on the same transaction. Here, 6A. This was different from our previous example, and we know that it's not root cause 1 because the handle count is set to 1, meaning that the connection has not been issued or closed by the application. Let's move forward to slide number 17. How do we resolve root cause 2? So as I said, the trace data shows different shared connections, denoted by MC wrapper 5B71BE and MC wrapper 59, are running on the same thread, 6A, with a handle count of 1. In the previous example of root cause number 1, the handle count was 0. So the application is not closing connections in this case. However, in this case, these are nested connections in the same thread. When you have nested calls, each created connection, it will be dependent on the other connection allotted on the same thread. Thus, when a connection must be closed before the transaction can end, the connections must be removed from the pool. So, for instance, if the application issued a close request on connection 1, it will remain allocated until the LTC ended or the global transaction was committed, and then the same connection would be used on the second GET connection call. What we need to do to resolve this type of nested behavior is the application needs to follow the standard GET use close pattern for the first connection before any additional calls to a second connection. It's important that we don't make 2 GET connection calls or a GET connection call and another connection that's dependent on another one. In this case, because we'll have to wait for both the connections to end before we can remove from the pool. Nested connections should be avoided at all possible, instances. However, if the application is already deployed and the application cannot be changed due to the application developers or any other unforeseeable means, we should switch to an unshareable connections, and we should increase the maximum connection pool size to address these nested connection calls. So in this case, we know that every connection created is going to require 2 connections to be created. So we should increase the connection pool to adhere to that demand from the application. Move forward to slide 18. Root cause 3, connection leak in the application. And again, this is a very prevalent issue that we see as level 2 analysts, and I know in a lot of client environments as well. Again, let's note, start at the top of the stack, the pool manager name, jdbc/db2pool. Again, the total number of connection is 5, so we know the connection pool is currently exhausted. In this case, however, the shareable connection information, there are no shareable connections in the pool. So we know that it's not root cause 1 and not root cause 2. In this case, however, we've been presented with some new information. We have 5 total connections in the unshareable pool, each denoted by a different MC wrapper ID, and each connection, each handle count is 1. Now, next to the handle count information, we see a start time in use. This actually tells us when the first GET connection call was made by the application, and it actually outputs the time in use, in this case, 178 seconds. And this type of information will be seen in both the show pool contents and also trace data. As Dave alluded to earlier, as Dave stated earlier, this will require, with this type of information, a restart of the application server, because we need to see the connection allocated in the pool, and it cannot be, we can't get the in-use time from a runtime trace because the app server wouldn't know when the GET connection call was first made by the application. Now, underneath the last unshareable connection information, we see a new output as well, the connection leak logic information. And here, in this case, we've only provided 1 output, but there will be 5 matching, there will be a matching MC wrapper ID under the connection leak logic information for each connection in the unshareable pool. Now, the connection leak logic information is outputted for each connection that has been allocated for longer than 10 seconds. In this case, the time in use has been 178 seconds. And it's important to note this information that Webster outputs, because it provides us where in the application the GET connection call was made. And so we know that if the application must make a GET, use, close type of application logic, then if we know where the GET connection was made in the application, there should be a matching close connection call somewhere in the application down the line. And here in this case, we can see the GET connection call, stack trace information, and the lowest bottom stack information, we see com.wste, wstservlet.dopost, servlet, wstservlet.java, line 62. So we know in this Java file at line 62, there was a GET connection call made for this particular application, for this particular connection. Let's move forward to slide 19. How do we resolve root cause number 3? As I said on the previous slide, the trace data shows unshareable connections in the LTC. The trace data will either show an unshareable connection in the LTC or a shareable connection unlisted in a global transaction, and then we can eliminate root cause 1. Each connection will be allocated on different threads, so we know that a connection is not dependent on another connection to be removed from the pool. And also, the connection leak logic information will have a handle count of 1 and will output the code responsible for making the GET connection call in the trace data or on the show pool contents. Since the handle count is 1, we know that the application is not calling close or not calling close properly due to the handle count being 1 or exception handling. If we review the application, and I put the application lines in the presentation, we can see as the show pool content show, as the connection leak logic showed us, on line 62, we see a con equals a data source.get connection call. And this would be the case in every application that is deployed and run and uses and leverages our Webster Application Server connection pool. So the next step, once we find the matching GET connection call, is to review the application and ensure that the reference GET connection call has a matching close call. And then the close call is done properly. So if we move to slide 20, here we'll overview how to properly close a connection call in a finally block. Again, you can see the GET connection call on line 62. And then below that, we can see we close the result set, and then the prepare statement, and then the connection. Now, to ensure that any exception handling between all of those issues, between all of those lines, is done correctly, we include the connection close in a finally block as well. Is there anything you'd like to add to that as well, David?
One of the typical reasons why we see connection leaks is that the application might be closing the connection in the main code path, but then an exception might occur prior to that close call happening, which means that the connection effectively never gets closed. So we recommend always closing your connection in a finally block, like we show here, to ensure that it's always closed. The finally block is always executed, even when an exception occurs.
Exactly.
Okay, so we can go to slide 21. Okay, so the fourth root cause is long-running queries. So if we've already ruled out the other root causes that Hobart talked to us about, it could be that that we've got long-running queries or the database is taking a long time to respond. You can see in this example, we're using global transactions. It's not an LTC. The thread ID is unique for each connection. So if we go to the next slide, 22. So I mentioned, it's not either of the first two root causes. We might see in the trace that connections eventually do close, so it's not a connection leak like we had in root cause number three. And you can see in this example, this is later from the same trace. The connections are now in the free pool. So we see that that it's not a connection leak. Go to slide number 23. So what we want to do is figure out why are connections being held in use for a long time, even though, there's no connection leak. We know they're eventually being closed. What's taken such a long time for those connections to be released? So what we do is check activity on the threads that held the connections. So, for example, we can follow thread 1D, which we saw from the trace example on the previous slides. And if you follow that thread, if you basically search for that thread ID in the trace, and again, this is something that you would really need to have a trace for because the show pool contents output will not have this information in it. But in the trace, you can search for that thread and find, what was the last trace entry on that particular thread before the connection was in use for a long period of time. And you may find an execute query call or could be an execute update call, but it's usually the queries that take a long time. Here we see it started at one particular time, and then it returns 4 minutes later. So we can see the four-minute difference, 21:29 and 21:33. If we look right before the execute query entry call was made, you should be able to find the actual statement that was being executed that was taking so long. So here we see the SQL statement. Is this select slow query? This is actually a way to trigger a slow query from an Oracle database that we use sometimes for testing purposes. You would usually see your own SQL statement that your application is executing. What I usually do is I then check other threads to find other long-running execute query or execute update calls, or it might just be some other long-running operation. It might not necessarily be a query. It really could be anything that is performing slowly that's causing the connection to be held longer. And you can use the IBM Trace and Request Analyzer tool. We strongly recommend this tool. It's available from our DeveloperWorks website. And you can basically input your trace file, and it can quickly find any long-running method calls, including JDBC queries or updates. So we use that quite frequently to debug this kind of problem. Instead of having to manually find these long-running operations in the trace, it automatically finds them for you, so it saves you some time. Slide 24. Okay, so the next step to resolve this problem would be to work with your DBA or the database vendor support team to determine why the statement is taking longer than expected to execute. So they may ask you for JDBC driver tracing to be enabled, and that tracing can be enabled from within the application server. You can enable DB2 JDBC driver tracing, Oracle JDBC driver tracing, also SQL Server, and have that trace output actually output to the WebSphere traces. You can also have them written to separate files. Another thing that you can try is you can try executing the same statement from a JDBC program outside of the application server on the same machine using the same JDBC driver and the properties specified in the data source. Sometimes people will say, well, I ran the query from a command line tool like the Oracle SQL Plus tool, for example, and it returned very quickly. But that's not really an apples-to-apples test because the command line tool isn't using the JDBC driver. It's usually run from the same machine as the database. So if it's not even using the driver, is not using the same properties that you specified in your data source. So executing the statement from a Java program using the same driver and the same machine as the application server usually will result in the same slow performance from the query. To resolve it, one thing that we recommend, it's a relatively new property, is the WebSphere default query timeout. Now, you've always been able to set a query timeout in the application on the statement, but that obviously requires a code change, and it requires the foresight to know that you might have a long-running query. If you're troubleshooting, it may not be easy to make that update. So we have this WebSphere default query timeout property that you can set on the data source, and it will time out a query after a specified amount of time. There's also another a property that syncs it with the transaction timeout. If you just happen to have long-running statements and they're expected, that would, obviously cause your connections to be used longer than they might typically be used by another application. You may just need to increase the maximum connection pool size. Moving to slide 25. Okay, so now if you've ruled out all of the other root causes, it may just be that the maximum connections is set too low. Usually we want to test for all of the other conditions, check for them before we say just increase your maximum connection pool size. But sometimes it really is just an issue of the maximum connection pool size being low. So we want to cover that one as well. You can see in the trace example here, our maximum connection pool size is 5, and you can see the waiter count underneath is 45. So that means we've got 45 threads waiting for a connection, and there's only 5 connections that can be created in the pool. You can see we're using global transactions. We've got different thread IDs for each connection, so it's not any of those previous problems either. If you go to slide 26, so as I mentioned, what we saw in the trace data allows us to rule out root cause number 1, number 2, and number 3, and number 4, right? You want to make sure also for root cause number 3 that the connections all do eventually close. You want to make sure there are no long-running JDBC statements or other operations. If you've ruled out all those other things, there might just be more load that can be handled with the current maximum connection pool size. So we're often asked, well, what should we set our maximum connection pool size to? And the easiest answer is check the value of your web container maximum thread pool size, if it's a servlet or JSP application, or the orb thread pool size if this is an EJB application. By default, those maximum thread pool sizes are both 50, but you want to make sure that that your maximum connection pool size is at least as high as those thread pool sizes, so that if you do have 50 threads all coming in at the same time requesting connections, each one would actually be able to get a connection. So the guideline is basically set your maximum connection pool size to be equal to or greater than your web container or orb thread pool size. And you also want to make sure the allow thread allocation beyond maximum thread size checkbox is not selected for those thread pools, because then even more threads could be created. And this is likely the root cause if the problem only occurs under high load and goes away when the problem is reduced. So usually when people are talking to me about the problem, if they say, well, this only happens under high load, I suspect that this might be the root cause of the problem. So go to slide 27. So to resolve the problem, you want to increase maximum connections. Like I said, make it equal to or greater than your maximum thread pool size. Run thorough load testing to find the ideal value for maximum connections. You can run a trace or show pool contents to find the highest waiter count, and then add that to the current value of maximum connections. So the waiter count is just the number of threads waiting for a free connection. If we had that number of connections, we wouldn't have any waiters and we wouldn't have the problem. You can also enable PMI and use the connection pool counters in the Tivoli Performance Viewer within the admin console to find the best value. We used to recommend that more often, but since show pool contents became available, we don't recommend it as often because the show pool contents is sometimes easier and provides the most accurate data. But PMI is an option. There are counters including the pool size, the free pool size, the wait time, waiting thread count, allocate count, and return count that all should give you an idea of how high your maximum connection pool size should be. Moving to slide 28. So lastly, just general suggestions. Sometimes we hear from our clients that the problem occurred once and it can't be reproduced, so no data can be collected. And they just want some general guidelines to reduce the likelihood that connection wait timeouts might occur in the future. So, if it's impossible to get any kind of data, here are some things that we would recommend. So first, test with higher values for maximum connections. Number two, ensure that the maximum connections is equal to or greater than your web container or orb thread pool sizes. Number three, check your application for connection leaks, especially cases where there's no finally blocked to close connections. Number four, ensure that your application is following the get use close pattern and not requesting a second connection before it closes the first one. And number five, switch from shareable to unshareable connections if your application is not using global transactions and as a result is using LTCs. If you do those things, that will eliminate most connection wait timeouts. Hobart, did you want to add something?
Yeah, in addition to that, and this more is for the former, which is the problem cannot be reproduced, collecting trace data or outputting show pool contents information will give you some contributing factors possibly. I think we discussed in the presentation that, you know, these connection wait timeout exceptions don't happen all at once. It takes time for the connection pool to be exhausted, especially in cases where there's a large connection pool or a connection pool at a large scope. So understanding that even if the problem can't reproduce, it might not be required that the problem be reproduced all the way to complete failure or production outage. Collecting a trace, maybe while connection pool is at half capacity or along those lines, could give you strong contributing factors that we've identified in the fault and the root causes. If you're not closing connections, you'll see that with one connection, you'll see it with 300. So it's important to know that as well.
Good point. All right, going to slide 29.
So as a summary of our presentation, we went over the overview of connection wait timeouts, and that goes in more in depth by our colleagues in another WSTE. We went over the problem symptoms, data collection in both runtime tracing and collecting tracing from startup, and also using the TPV or Tivoli Performance Viewer or show pool contents. Data analysis on both the five common root causes, shareable connections with LTC, multiple connection handles or nested connections on the same thread without call and close, connection leaks in the application, long-running queries or slow database response times, maximum connections or tuning when the connections are too low, and how to resolve each of these root causes. And again, this is not by any means a complete list of all root causes for connection wait timeout exceptions. In both of our experiences, we've seen a combination of these root causes, or one and then, you know, caused by another. So this is not a final list. It's definitely other ways that you can exhaust the pool, but this is definitely the five most common root causes. And we can move to slide number 30.
Okay, additional resources, just some other things if you want to learn more. First one is the technical exchange that we referenced earlier that two of our teammates did last month on just giving a general overview of connection pooling. The second one is another WSCE that other members of our team did a couple of years ago called Response Time Analysis for Databases and Web Services. That one actually talks about that trace and request analyzer tool that I mentioned and how you can use that to find any long-running operations in your application. Then we've got the must gather for connection pooling problems. If you do open a PMR for this sort of problem, you can be prepared by collecting some of the data outlined in that must gather document so that we can help you as quickly as possible. The fourth one is a tech note on how to troubleshoot these types of problems. It talks extensively about using show pool contents, how to get that output. And finally, there's a good education assistant module on connection pool tuning and management problems that talks about all the tuning options that we've talked about in this presentation and more. So that's available in that final link. And if we go to slide 31, I'll turn it back over to David Long.
Thank you, Hobart and David, for a great presentation. Slide 31 has some additional WebSphere product resources, which we hope you would find useful. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Bindu Garo.
Thank you. Thanks, Bush and David, for your presentation. I have a question. We do see this kind of long-running queries in the log files, and it causes a performance issue in the application and JVMs. So at that time, what we normally do is we'll recycle the JVMs and also the clear out the max sessions. That usually normally resolves the issue. Could be it is like a workaround. But are there any suggested workarounds? Do you suggest? Normally, we cannot able to recreate that problem at the given time.
Okay, so if it is a long running query, it's hard to say that there are any workarounds. I mean, really, you would need to identify, is the query supposed to be long running or not? Maybe it's a database performance issue. If it's not supposed to be long-running, then, that would obviously need to be corrected on the database side. But we know that some applications just have some queries that are very long-lasting. If that's the case, really what you need to do is just compensate for that by having a higher maximum connection pool size, for example. Do you have any other suggestions there, Hobart?
Yeah, and as another workaround, like Dave said, identifying the length of time that the connection should be in use would be the first point of action. The next would be, as a workaround, possibly enabling some driver-level properties that can time out the query that's in use so that the database and the JVM don't have to rely upon this database. I know Oracle and both DB2 have properties that you can enable, so it will time out, re-time out, or a query time out, so that the query can be ended and the JVM can continue processing as usual.
Okay, thank you. Also, a recommended max thread pool size is 50, right? Can we increase more than 50 so that it can accept more threads to process so that it can avoid long-running queries?
The question was, can you increase your maximum thread pool size to avoid long-running queries?
So
you can increase the maximum thread pool size. I mean, the only issue with that is you don't want to increase it too high and increase it so that the JVM would require more resources than it has available. But that wouldn't really help with long-running queries. I mean, a long-running query is just a query on one thread. I mean, I guess if you had a lot of threads being tied up with long-running queries, you could potentially create more so that you have more threads running at the same time. So, yeah, I guess that would be a workaround.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
No problem.
We do have several questions in the group chat. The first one, how can we find the number of connections open to DataSource?
That question, so either you can collect some runtime tracing, sample output or configuration tracing. You can invoke a WSAdmin, show pool content, or you can enable some counters in Tibly Performance Viewer as well to see how many git connection calls you're making, how many you're closing. Those would be the three recommended methods.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, is the max connections per node for all nodes? That is, for example, if there are max connections is 10 and there are two nodes, does that mean the max is 5 per node, or is it that one node could open 6 connections and the second node could only open up to 4?
Yeah, so this is, to answer that question, nodes, this is related to scopes, so scopes of data sources. If you have a node scope data source, then all JVMs, let's say you have a node scope data source of 10 max connections, then all JVMs under that node will have, all that data source will be replicated to all the JVMs under that node, and each JVM under that node will have 10 connections that it can allocate to the database. Likewise, at a cell scope data source, all the nodes and JVMs under that cell will have that data source replicated to all the JVMs underneath that cell, and they will all be able to open a connection to the database.
Yeah, so each JVM has its own connection pool.
Yeah.
So the connections don't get shared across JVMs. I think that's kind of what he was asking.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question I think is probably the same question but worded differently. If the data source is created at cluster level and the max connections is 10, will each JVM have 10 connections or they share those 10 connections?
Exactly. So each, if a cluster scope data source has a max connection of 10, then each JVM under that cluster will have a max connection, will have a data source with a max connection of 10.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, how to check runtime connections usage?
Yeah, I think that's similar to one of the earlier questions as well. So you can the way that I would recommend primarily would be with the show pool contents command. That's getting the data directly from our connection pooling component. You can also use PMI and the Tivoli Performance Viewer using some of the counters that we discussed as well.
Okay. And then the next question, is there any article which explains shareable versus unshareable?
I put an excellent article in the chat, and I believe we have some on the resources page of the presentation that explicitly explain shareable connections, and importantly, most importantly, shareable connections with LTC and unshareable connections with global transactions.
Okay, thank you.
So the article though that you mentioned, I don't think
yeah,
you put that in additional resources, but that one. If you want to find that article, it's on the DeveloperWorks website, and the person who wrote it, his name is Paul Johnson, and his name is Johnsen. If you search for his name on the DeveloperWorks site, it will come up, and it goes over the differences between shareable and unshareable connections. I believe that article is about 8 years old at this point, and the information is still relevant. But we do have also on the information centers for all the currently supported versions of WebSphere Application Server pretty good pages that talk about the same thing, the differences between shareable and unshareable connections. So those would be good resources. And the Education Assistant link that we put in additional resources, it also does talk about shareable versus unshareable connections as well. So there are quite a few resources that are out there.
Yeah, in addition to that tech note, how to troubleshoot J2CA 0045 exceptions, on that tech note, if you go to the related information, it will have a link to the DeveloperWorks article that Dave was referring to as well.
Okay, thank you. And then, wouldn't switching to unshareable mode increase the max thread count, and wouldn't this indirectly impact the CPU usage by the JVM?
No. The only impact, and we talked about this on the shareable versus unshareable connection slide, I mean, the only real impact is if you happen to be getting multiple connections within the same transaction, you would be, with unshareable connections, the second get connection call would get a connection from the free pool instead of reusing the same connection that is already allocated to that transaction. So it's only a small percentage of cases where you're actually using multiple connections within the same transaction. But even if you are, most of the time, it's going to be getting a connection from the free pool. So it's going to be getting a pooled connection, which means that it doesn't mean if you're using unshareable connections that we're going to be creating a new connection for you. It just means we're getting it from the free pool. So that's why I said the performance impact really is negligible for using unshareable connections. We've never seen a PMR come in where somebody reported slow performance and it was because they were using unshareable connections. So even if you saw a slight performance impact, it would be, you know, a factor of milliseconds. It would be very small.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, what's the impact if I keep max con value to a high value? Will it impact memory?
It can.
We have to understand, too, this question. We have to understand that the connection pool won't, if we have a max connection of, say, 150 connections, we're not going to create all the connections at the same time at the start of the JVM. Again, so we can't say that it will have a negative impact on memory. The connections will be created incrementally or as needed, as requested by the application. So if you have a high connection pool setting, all the threads won't start at once. But again, if your application demands it, or if you run into one of these five scenarios where the connections aren't being released from the pool, you can run into very serious memory issues or contention problems.
Thank you. Then the next question may be beyond the scope of this presentation, but can someone also explain a bit on global transactions and waiter count?
Yeah, sure. So global transactions is just two types of transactions in WebSphere. We have local transaction containment and then global transactions. Global transactions is just a way for the application to manage the transaction and commit the transaction. And then the waiter count is a way in WebSphere that we identify in our trace log the number of application requests beyond exhausted connection pools. So if we see in sample trace data a waiter count of 10, then we know that the application requested 10 new connections be created on top of the connection exhaustion issue or the max connection setting in the pool. Is there anything else you want to add, Dave?
Yeah, so just a little bit more on global transactions. So really the advantage of using a global transaction is that WebSphere application server itself manages the transaction life cycle. So within WebSphere you can use, you know, one or multiple resources all under one transaction. So when you use multiple resources, we call that two-phase commit. So we actually manage the committing or rolling back of all of those resources. So you never get into a scenario where part of the transaction is completed and other parts aren't. It's all or nothing, right? Classic example is with bank transactions, right? If you take money out of one account and deposit money into a second account, you want to make sure that either that whole thing occurs or doesn't occur at all, because you don't want the money to be taken out of one account and then, you know, just never put into the second account, right? So it handles, you know, that for you. And then in the absence of using a global transaction, right, the only form of a transaction is on the resource manager itself or on the database itself. And so we create what we call an LTC, a local transaction containment, where we just kind of encapsulate these resource manager local transactions, but WebSphere itself doesn't act as the transaction coordinator to commit them or roll them back.
Yeah, so you won't see, like, when you use an LTC, you won't see transaction timeouts. That's a global transaction type of property, and, you know, the transaction rollbacks and different things like that. That would be more of the global transaction or user transaction.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, what are the pros and cons of setting min.io connection pool to zero?
I can take that one. So we recommend setting the minimum connection pool size to zero. It really isn't related to connection wait timeouts, but it's definitely a best practice. And like Hobart was saying earlier, we don't create automatically any number of connections in the pool. I know some people think that we automatically will create up to the minimum number of connections, and that's not true. We only create a connection when the application requests one. And so the minimum connection pool size is just the number of connections that WebSphere has to keep in the pool even after a period of inactivity where WebSphere will start to clean up its connections. We have what's called unused timeout. So after, by default, that's set to 30 minutes. So after 30 minutes, if a connection is not used, we remove it from the pool. If you have minimum connections set to one or greater, that means that we can't clean up that number of connections. Those connections have to stay in the pool. And often what happens is that the connection will be closed either on the database side or by something on the network. Usually a firewall will close the connection after a certain period of inactivity. And then if that connection is still in the connection pool, the next time the application tries to use it, it gets a stale connection exception. So to avoid that, we recommend setting the minimum connection size to zero. There's a lot of advantages to it, and there's really no downside.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question. Why is the connection pool connection timeout value set to 180 seconds? Wouldn't a more reasonable default value be something like 5 to 10 seconds?
Yeah, so I can take that one. So that's a good point. As we know, you know, connections to databases and queries being executed should take a magnitude of seconds, if not milliseconds, to be executed. And so lowering it to, you know, 5 to 10 seconds would be applicable. We understand that, you know, not every environment.
About the connection timeout, though.
Yeah. So not every environment, however, is, you know, like that. And there may be cases.
So the connection timeout is the number of seconds to wait for a
free connection.
So. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of cases, it makes sense to reduce it. I know the default has always been 180 seconds, going back at least to WebSphere 3.5 and probably earlier. And I think the reason is that, you know, you want to give your users a chance. You know, basically, you know, a user of your website, right, you know, is coming in, issuing some kind of request, right? And in that request, it's trying to get a connection from the connection pool. It really depends on your application. You might want the request to time out after 5 or 10 seconds, and if so, you can reduce that connection timeout. But I think just to avoid having it time out really early for everybody, you know, we have it set to 180 seconds as a default. You know, if it was me in my own environment, I would probably set it to 30 seconds or 60 seconds. But you know, that is the default.
Yeah, I apologize. I misunderstood your question. And to add to that as well, lowering it, you know, to a lower value that could be very helpful because you know a lot of these connections because we could get to a condition where let's say you have a max connection setting of 5, and then the connection. You know, we have a increased amount of load, and the connection pool actually cleans up on its own. It just gets a little behind. We will still output, if this is set to a low value, we'll still output a connection wait timeout exception. But if there was like an increased amount of load or some high demand during peak hours, that would also, it might be a false warning.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, would you be throwing some info about transaction logs?
Yeah, transaction logs we didn't talk about in this presentation. That's really a part of the transaction manager component. I actually did a WSTE on the transaction manager in 2007, and it talked about transaction recovery using the transaction logs, you know, in detail. So. I would recommend looking at that presentation. We also have lots of information in the Information Center about transaction recovery and the transaction logs as well.
Okay, thank you. We're getting close to running out of time, and I just want to mention that your email addresses are on the first slide of this presentation, and if we don't get to your question, feel free to email Hobart and David. And then one more question. What does servant region mean?
I believe that's a ZOS term. We didn't use it in this presentation, so I'm not sure what triggered that question, but I believe that's specific to the ZOS environment. there's actually another support team that we work with that handles WebSphere application server problems on ZOS. So if you have a more specific question about the servant region, feel free to email us and we can try to get the right people engaged to help answer that question.
All right, thank you. And then another question. I may have missed this if already mentioned, but where can I find the option for shareable, unshareable option? Is it on the data source page?
So changing from unshareable or shareable option is not on the data source page. It's either in the application deployment descriptors and the resource references of the application, or you can set a custom property by default. So if you don't have either of those two things set by default, due to specification, as David stated earlier, the data source will be set to shareable connections.
Okay, thank you. And then we've got time for one or two more. It's been suggested to make the min-max connections value the same. However, I couldn't find any doc that supports this. Is there any benefit to making the min and max connections the same?
No, we wouldn't recommend that. And that kind of goes back to the question about setting minimum connections to zero. We would recommend setting minimum connections to zero. There's really no benefit. If you set minimum and maximum connections to the same value, that would mean that WebSphere couldn't clean up any of its connections, and you're almost guaranteed that you're going to get stale connection exceptions in that case.
Okay, thank you. And then someone's asking, can anyone explain about stale connection errors?
Yeah, so stale connection errors or stale connection exceptions are just a way that WebSphere out wraps any type of connection, invalid connection thrown by the driver. So whenever there's a case that a connection is closed, either due to a firewall or the database closing it preemptively, or the connection becoming invalid due to some OS level timeouts, then the driver will actually throw some type of invalid connection exception. WebSphere will map that exception to a stale connection exception, and then we will throw a stale connection exception back to the application, which should catch the stale connection exception and then try to issue a new get connection call. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave? Kind
of
like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we could say about stale connection problems.
Yeah.
It's almost worthy, I think, of...
It's a whole presentation.
of a separate presentation, because there's a lot of things that go into it. It's a very big problem in the area of connection pooling as well. In general, you know, we recommend setting minimum connections to zero, reduce unused timeout and possibly your age timeout, so that WebSphere can clean up the connections in the pool faster than the firewall or the database can.
Yeah.
And also catching the stale connection exception in your application to recover.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, we've run out of time and must conclude the question and answer session. If we were unable to answer your question, please send an email either to Hulbert or David. Their email addresses are on the first slide of this presentation, or to wsehelp@us.ibm.com, and we will do our best to respond to your question. We do hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Hulbert and David, for presenting today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.